Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mental Leap, the show that places power in your hands and information for your mind. Let others leave small lines, but not you. Let others place their future in someone else's hands, but if you listen to the show, you'll make sure it's not you. We'll provide you with the keys, but it's up to you to unlock the door.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mental Leak. Today our show is about good credit. How important is it to you? How do you obtain it? If you have bad credit, how do you get good credit? Today my guest is Calvin Russell Jr. I like to call him Mr. Russell, a very sharp man, very sharp guy. He's with Go Simply Pro Credit Consultation. Calvin has helped hundreds of men and women turn their credit scores around. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Calvin on. How you doing today, Calvin? Calvin, how you doing today, my brother?
I'm doing pretty good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. I can hear you just fine. All right, so tell us tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started with a credit consultation, and tell us your history, your story. You have a very powerful story. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you for even inviting me on this call. Just being on a platform such as this one, it's most definitely great, not just for me, but for the growth of the company and just helping as many people as we can. So first, I want to make sure I give that thanks out to you. So,
okay. I appreciate that.
All right. So now, of course, my name is Calvin Russell. I'm the CEO and founder of Go Simply Pro Credit Consultation. And pretty much a little bit about myself. I come from the automotive industry. I've been in the automotive industry for about 5 years. And I deal with credit all day. And I was in a situation where I was helping some people get a car, and they were not able to. And normally, I was in sales. I was in sales at the time. And normally what we do, we get a customer. We see if they qualify for a vehicle. And if they don't, we send them on their way and let them know, what the decision that the bank has made. But for some reason, I took it a little bit more personal, mainly because some of those people I knew on a personal level, and some people, of course, I didn't know at all, but I felt like, why are we just, in short, kicking these people out, right? And I said to myself, you know what, let me check my own credit, before I start, see if I can help someone else. And at the time, my credit score was a 503. For those who don't know too much about credit scoring, the highest you can get is 850. So the easiest way to explain it is, if I owed you $850 and only gave you 503, would that be okay? And most people say, absolutely not. So either way, I said to myself, you know what? Let me make sure I get my situation straight first. And I increased my own score from a 503 to a 710 in less than 11 months. I was excited about that, especially the progress. And I did all of that because I was in the process of looking for a home. And also, in the middle of that, I was able to, pay off my student loans, which I'm sure we'll get to a little bit later. And either way, so I started giving out, free information to people that were coming in. And I said, listen, I'll look at the report. I said, all you have to do is this, and this, give them a list of 5 to 10 things to do. Of course, that list was different for every customer. They would come back. So not all, but some will come back in 3 months, 6 months. And it was like, oh, my God, my score is, like, phenomenal right now. And they would, so there were people that got denied, they got approved. There were people that lowered their car payments. And I did that for a while, and for about a couple months, actually. And there was this one customer that said, you know what, my aunt is looking to improve her score, but she's not looking to buy a car. Would it be okay if she calls you on a personal basis? And she did. And that was actually my first client, and that was hundreds of clients ago. So but that's how the company started.
Oh, that's good to hear. Good to hear. Let's talk a little bit about credit. You see a lot of people on TV or in person that have things. But when you get down to it, they have horrible credit. What is it about credit that indicates character? And what is it about credit that really tells us what your life is like and what your life will be about.
You know what? I think that credits is a subject that I would have to say, you know, it's underrated. You know, credit is one of those things where, you know, because you're always talking about finance, and a lot of times, you know, we associate finance with how much money you make, and, you know, then we talk about expenses, and then we start talking about saving, you know, but a lot, a tough subject that's a tough for a lot of people to talk about, even people that have good credit, you know, is, you know, their credit score. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, see, you don't really start talking about credit until you're an adult, right? So as an adult, I always like to say children have report cards and adults have credit reports. And, you know, just like when a child comes home with, you know, a few C's and B's, they're not that excited as if they come home with like A's and B's, you know. So, and right. As an adult, we have to reflect on that. And we, it's like, you know, man, how did I get in this situation? You know, what happened? How did I get in this situation, you know, to even begin with? And I think that's the reason why. And another thing, too, is that a lot of, you know, I would say baby boomers kind of shunned away from telling, you know, the next generation about credit. I even have some of my peers, I'm in my 20s, so I have some of my peers, you know, they say, well, my mom told me that credit wasn't important. I shouldn't get a credit card. You know, sorry, I got a one-year-old in the background. Let me turn this down. And either way, you know, so they would talk about, you know, how credit card's not important, you know, pay everything cash. Now, I'm not saying don't do that, but at the same time, don't neglect the importance of credit. I mean, if you're looking to purchase a home, unless you're looking to pay for it cash, which, by the way, less than 5% of people are paying for things cash, especially a home. I'm not saying that you can't do it, but my point is, let's be honest. If you bought a car, let's say you got the money. Let's say you have $15,000, you pay for the car cash. That's phenomenal. You know, but you and I both know in about 5 to 10, you know, let's say 10 years from now, you're going to need another car. So the chances, if, you know, actually USA Today wrote an article on it, it's not necessarily smart, so especially to, you know, to spend cash on a depreciating item such as a house, such as a car, and not necessarily say that you should finance, and of course you have, you know, interest rates and things of that sort. But see, there are some things that you just can't get away from, like, you know, having an electricity bill. You can't get out of that. You know, financing a car, or getting a car, I should say, you really can't get out of that, you know, and your credit has to be right regardless. I'll give you a quick story, you know, because I have some older clients that are in their, you know, 60s and 70s, and they're like, you know, I just had no idea that I would be in a situation where I would need credit again, because now they're in the process of selling a home. Now, of course, they got to buy another home, where back in the day they had the cash to pay, you know, to actually, you know, pay for the home in cash. And now they have to finance again. And all of that history that they used to have years ago is no longer on their credit reports. You know, so it's a part of life now, you know. So I know now, you know, a lot of people have student loans. You know, they have certain types of interest rates. You know, if you're looking to refinance those student loans, guess what? They got to run your credit. You know, and some jobs, they don't necessarily look at your credit score, but they do look at your credit report, you know, to see what your relationship has been with previous financial institutions. You know, so but it's become a way of life, and I think that more and more people are becoming more aware of it. You know, and companies like Credit Karma, you know, they're making things more aware of now, you know, which is huge. I think that's really huge, but it's a way of life now.
Right. Okay, so let's say I have bad credit, and I get in contact with you. What's the process to turn that credit around? I know talking to you personally, we talk about habits, changing personal habits, but once you start getting it turned around, it usually only takes a few months, right?
You know what? I mean, I would have to say that everyone's situation is different. My clients are averaging 25 to 30 points increase per month, and the reason why that average is like that, there's three groups of people. I have some people, you know, that I'll give an example. I've had a client. I'll give you three examples. I had a client. She went from a 597 to a 770 in less than 6 months. I had another client. He went from a 603 to a 722 in 1 month. I had another client who went from a 676. From a 498 to a 676 in 45 days. You know, so everyone's results are going to be a little bit different. So now, how it would work is, of course. Now, just so you guys know, I have clients that have come to me in the 700s. They're just looking to, you know, achieve a goal of 800 or higher, you know. So, but majority of my clients, I say 99%, come to me, and they don't necessarily have the best credit score. And they come to me and they say, you know what, how do we get started? And the first thing I do, of course, you know, you register, you sign up with me, And, of course, my price is extremely affordable. There are some companies charging $1,500, $1,000, $700, $500. Right now, I only charge $300. And it's not monthly. It's one time. You have access to me for 6 months. You have, you know, of course, any questions, comments, or concerns, you could ask in, through that entire period. And so I do everything over the phone. So that allows me to have a nationwide business. And so just like on the phone now, I take a look at your report. I tell you everything that we need to look, everything that we need to remove, everything that we need to add, and everything that, you know, that I also educate as well. A lot of times people think improving your credit score is just removing items, and that's not what it is. Because I've had clients who are in the low 500s with no, with without any negative items, you know, no bankruptcies, no collections, no late payments, you know. So what, now what do you tell a person then? You know, so that's where you have to be educated. And just so you guys know, I am a certified FICO professional. That means that the company Fair Isaac Incorporation, that's a company that actually makes the FICO score. That's a score that 90% of lenders use. That's a score that matters. It's a score that, you know, when you go get a home or look for a car, that's the score that they're going to look at. So I know exactly how that algorithm works. And the algorithm is, you know, pretty much a machine. It, well, that's how to look at it. You know, it takes what's on your report. It, you know, and, of course, the algorithm says, okay, based on what's on their report, this is their credit score. So, but, yeah, you have access to me for 6 months. Any questions, comments, or concerns, you get 3 phone consultations. One is for 45 minutes, and then you get a game plan. The game plan is really the bread and butter because it's a written version of everything that we talk about during your phone consultation. And then 3 months later, we do a follow-up. And then, of course, for half an hour, then you get another game plan. And then 3 months later, we do another follow-up, and then you get your final game plan. And normally by that time, my clients are normally in the 700s. You know, on average, but then there's some people that, you know, they need a little bit more work. And I also have a follow-up program with that because most of my, but I was, like I say, if you do exactly what I tell you to do, in only about 6 months, you should be in the 700s. Of course, I can't guarantee that, you know, but I do have a follow-up program. It's called the 850 Club Membership. And, you know, of course, the name says it all. You know, the goal is to get you to the 850, you know, and beyond. So, well, not beyond, but 850. So, but yeah, and that's only $29.98 per month. And that gives you on-demand access to me as a credit coach. I've had people call me for, you know, for basic questions, you know, basic credit questions. I had a client call me. She says, hey, my grandmother's at the dealership. I'm with her. They want me to co-sign for her. Should I do it? And I was like, well, based on your situation, I don't think it's best. And her grandmother was most definitely upset. And, you know, but that's my job. You know, that's what people pay me for. I'm your credit coach. And there's a lot of people that's not, you know, that are not in my field of work. There are a lot of people that are in the industry. But they're just, you know, it's more than just repair. I go what I call the RIM method. So R-I-M. So the R is for repair. You can get that anywhere, you know, but the I show you how to increase your score. Removing items doesn't increase your score. A lot of people think that, you know, but that's part of the process. So, and then the M is for maintain. All the work that we do and we improve your score, it doesn't matter if I don't show you how to maintain the credit score that we work so hard to build. And so that's how the process works when someone signs up with me.
Okay. So how do you build that credit score? What are those steps?
Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest with you. Everyone's situation is different. So I've seen it where some people just need to add the right type of accounts. I've seen it where I'll give you an example. Sometimes people, like they'll hear things out here like, you know, you got to get a credit card, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. But most people will try to apply for a credit card through their bank. And most banks, you know, that people have their checking account at Bank of America, Fifth Third, Chase, you know, just to name a few, those are what I call 680 and above banks. 680 and above banks are, you know, hence the word 680. You got to have a 680 or higher to even get approved for any of their financial products, including a credit card. So let's say, for example, you know, let's say you're making, you know, $30,000 a year, you know, just throwing numbers out there. Let's say $24,000 a year. $24,000, that's $12 an hour full time. Let's say Chase, and I know for a fact that you have to have, you know, a certain type of credit score, at least a 650 or 640 to get that type of credit card. So the average person, they say, well, I'm making a certain amount of money, you know, and you guys see my money, but why did I get denied for a credit card? And because of that, now they're like, you know what, I apply for a credit card. I guess building credit is not for me. And really, it's the right activity, just the wrong bank. You know, sometimes it's the right activity, just the wrong time. You know, so, you know, so in a situation like that, a lot of people don't know that there's so many, there's, oh, man, there's thousands of credit card companies out here. And a lot of people will apply for the wrong card, and they'll get denied multiple times. And, you know, and I see it all the time. Or I have a client, she got she's with Fifth Third Bank, and I tell my best not to name drop, but, I mean, you know, it is what it is. So, she's, and there's nothing wrong with Fifth Third Bank. I have accounts there myself. So, but either way, she applied for Fifth Third, and, of course, they denied her for a credit card, simple credit card. And they say, well, how about this? Because there's two different types of credit cards, and, you know, you guys can look it up on my blog. By the way, I do have a blog you guys can check out. A lot of free information that's there. So, and it talks about, you know, credit cards and, you know, secured cards versus unsecured. But either way, a secured card, she had to put down a deposit, not a down payment. A lot of people get that, you know, misunderstood. So a deposit, she had to put down $500. And, no, so she says, great, I'm building my credit, right? Yeah, but she didn't know that she could have gotten a secured credit card from somewhere else and only had to put down 50, you know. So, and really, Minty, we don't know what we don't know. And, right. You know, so that could be one of the things. Or it could be like I have a client who has too many credit cards. She has about 14 credit card accounts. And you know, so because once again, she believed the old mantra, you know, just build credit cards and things of that sort. Then another thing, too, is how to use a credit card. And the reason why I'm only spending a little time on credit cards is because it's so easy to get, but so many people don't know how to they don't know how to use one. And on my blog, I talk about that. So, but yeah, it could be that. It could be, you know, late payments. It could be student loan statuses. I've seen people pay everything else on time, but they just don't. They, you know, sometimes they're afraid to attack their student loans. So I give my clients a game plan, you know, towards those student loans. And you know, I mean, it could be so many different things. I had a client. She co-signed for a car for her sister, and she thought that she was going to be stuck on that loan forever. I showed her how to get off of that loan. So, I mean, there's so many ways to do certain things, you know, so it's really kind of hard to pinpoint. But those are usually like the top few things, I would guess, I see most of the time.
Okay. Let's switch gears a little bit. You have an amazing story about how you paid off your student loans. And you did it in a short amount of time. And most people never pay their student loans off. Or they take about 10 years, you know. So
yeah,
give us that story. Why, how, and what difference you noticed in your payment, your attitude, really, because a lot of people are a lot happier when they get rid of that. But what did you notice when you paid it off and the steps you took?
I got to say, Minty, you know, a lot of people ask me that. Okay, so, I had a job. Still have a job, you know. So I had a job at the time, and I also had a business as well. And in that business, I was bringing in some extra money. But if you add the money up, especially with the job I had, you know, I mean, I don't know. It was probably coming into maybe around $30,000, maybe under $40,000. I'm not sure. And but I knew that there had to be a compromise. The first thing, Minty, number one, I mean, me and my wife did. Been married to my wife, you know, since 2010. And what me and my wife did, we sat down, and of course, we made a budget. And in that budget, which by the way, my clients get for free, with signing up with me, it's a certain budget that we use, and it works out perfectly. And that budget, we were able to look at, you know, what was coming in, and we wrote down everything that we were spending our money to, from haircuts to, you know, from go to a laundromat, you know, groceries, you name it. And that way we can see, you know, how much money was supposed to be left, you know, after we get paid. And sometimes just seeing things is so much better. And that's the first thing. The second thing we did, we looked at our transaction history. And it was like, oh, my God, you know, now we see where our money is going. A lot of people, they spend money, you know, let's say fast food or going out. Not that you shouldn't, but if your goal is to, like, really get aggressive on your student loans, you have to make a compromise, you know. And, you know, but either way, so, of course, now I'll be, first off, I got to say, I did not finish college. My wife did. A lot of my friends did, whatever. I say that to say that some people may have a lot more student loans than me, but don't get it twisted. It wasn't like my loans were like $5,000. So my loans were probably around $20,000, I think, when I first took a look at it. And but this same method will most definitely work if you're anywhere between $40,000 to $60,000 with student loans. And some people have no idea even where they are. You know, so, but I'm telling you, just because I look at 30 to 40 credit applications a day, that the average student loans that people are in, the debt, probably somewhere between 40 to 60. So that's the same method I'm about to tell you guys is most definitely going to help. And really, it's not really a method. Like I said, just being aggressive, you know. So, well, for one, I did my taxes. And, of course, you know, you get a tax refund. But if your student loans are in a certain status, you won't get that refund. And that's what happened. And I'm like, okay. All right, so, you know, and you know how it is when you get taxes. You're like, you know what? you count that money, and of course you spend it before you get it, and then of course, sure enough, you don't get it at all. So things start to change. You become inquisitive, and you say, you know what? Okay, let me just look up this information, and let me see where I am. And that's when I found out how much I was at. It was around $20,000, no less than that, I know for sure. And so what we did was we just, you know, put our heads down, and we were like, okay, this is what we're going to start doing. And, you know, we got really tight on the budget. We didn't go out much, you know, so we only took care of things that we had to do. And what's funny is that a lot of those same principles and a lot of really that same budget that we built back in 2010 is part of the same budget we still use now. And, you know, we said, okay, we're going to use this amount for groceries per week. We're going to use this for this. We cut cable off. You know, a lot of people have cable. But if you look at your cable bill, now I'm not saying you got to start cutting stuff, but I mean, honestly, if you look at your cable bill versus how much time you spend on your phone versus how much time you're, you know, at work versus how much time you're on the internet versus how much time you actually look at a movie versus how much time you're actually hanging out with your friends, you're really just cable is just really, for me, it was a waste of money. And I know people that, you know, they got $150 cable bills. You know, so you do the math, that's $1,500 a year. You know, so, but no, yeah, so you have to turn that off and you start going to Redbox or Netflix and really everything's online anyway. You know, there's even something out right now, you know, I should get paid for this. It's called Sling TV. You know, it's $20 a month and you get ESPN, Lifetime, TNT, TBS, and, you know, HGTV, Food Network, a lot of channels for $20 a month versus paying $150. You know, so don't get me wrong, that was something that I was willing to sacrifice on. I look for ways to have cheaper insurance. I look for ways to break down, you know, credit card bills. I look for ways to, you know, get my hair cut by a different person. You know, so now, mind you, I'm the kind of person, I'm a firm believer, firm believer that people, that first off, Ferrari doesn't make Ferrari just for music videos and to rent. So I do have an ultimate goal to have a Ferrari or Lamborghini, you know, in the future, with like in the next 10 to 15 years. So I say that to say that I'm not the kind of guy that's like, well, you know, save everything and you don't enjoy your life. You only get one life. So we work too hard not to get things that we want in life. So, but I knew that I had to make a sacrifice. And I heard one of my mentors say this, short-term pain is a long-term gain. So right now it's going to hurt a little bit, but it's going to be worth it in the journey. And that's really what it was. We got the budget. We got it. We got really tight. Actually, you can Google. It's called Dave Ramsey Auto Excel Budget Sheet. That's Dave Ramsey Budget Sheet. But this particular budget sheet is actually really hard to find. But, I mean, all it is, it's automated. So you just plug the numbers in, and it's through Excel. You know, if you guys got Microsoft Excel. But even any budget sheet will work. You just have to do something. And that's what it is. But, I mean, we cut on, like I said, the laundry cost. And, you know, we went on certain days. We used, you know, I mean, so it wasn't like, you know, times were not hard by any means. But it was, because, you know, money was coming in. But it was like, okay, we got an extra, you know, and we carved out. And it went from an extra 100 to an extra 500 to an extra 1,000 being left over in a month. And then we just got really aggressive. And I think less than 3 years. I think probably like 2 years and some change that I paid that balance off, you know. And but then I know some people are going to listen to this and say, well, that's easy because you had 20,000. Yeah, but here's the thing, though. That even if let's say it took me all of 3 years to pay out 20,000. Let's say if you got 40,000, so now that's a 6-year plan. If you got 60,000, now that's a 9-year plan. It's better than the plan that they have a lot of people on right now, Minty, which a lot of people are paying $5 a month. If you do the math, the loan is going to outlive you. So that means at some point they're going to get more aggressive on collecting that money, and they know that you're making money, so it's not fair, you know. So but that's a whole nother conversation. So, but yeah, that's how I did it.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about debts and assets. So I'm a young person and I want to look good. What is it that I should do? Or what is an asset?
You know what? A lot of people, I'm glad you brought this up. A lot of people are miseducated on what is, you know, what's debt, what's an asset. So let's break this down. First, you do have what they call, there's actually good debt. And you also have what they call bad debt. You know, by the way, anyone who wants to look at this stuff, I only study, like when I give credit advice, when I give credit advice, I only give the habits of people that have credit scores of 780 or higher. So when I give you financial advice, this is coming from the best of the best, you know, of course, the financial side of Donald Trump. So before all this other stuff happened. So but either way, but like people like Robert Kiyosaki, you know, Susie Orman. I mean, there's so many people that are doing things, you know, a certain way. But Robert Kiyosaki, if you haven't read his book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, And also the game is called Cash Flow. I actually have the board game, and my favorite board game to play, I just played it last night, actually, it's funny. And, but either way, but he talks about, you know, there's good debt and there's bad debt. So now good debt is where, I'll give you an example. Let's say that you own, and this kind of goes into assets, because the way his philosophy is, it makes so much sense. A person thinks that when they have a home, it's an asset. Now, technically, on paper, it's an asset, because if something happens to you, you know, then of course, let's say if you owe some money to a bank or something, and you know, and of course you lose your job, they're going to come after your quote unquote asset, and their asset that's on paper would be your home. But in reality, an asset is something that actually makes you money, not something that's worth money, but something that makes you money. That's the difference. And so a lot of people think that their home is an asset. Your home is only an asset if you sell your home. So if you sell the home, then, of course, you've lost your asset. So, I mean, so it's technically, you know, it's like a catch-22. So how do you make your home an asset? Well, let's say, for example, this is a pretty big deal in Chicago. Let's say if you own a building. So instead of looking for, you know, a normal house, like a ranch house or, you know, a condo or something like that. If you go into, let's say, a two-flat, a three-flat, a four-unit building, whatever, you know, then you can stay in one of those units. For example, let's say you stay in a two-flat. So now you can stay in one of the floors. You can rent the other floor out. So let's say if your mortgage is $1,000, you can charge, you know, $1,000 rent. So now your home is an asset. Why is that? Because it's making you money. It's making you $1,000 a month. And just like my barber says, Calvin, I'm going to always have clients because hair is going to always be growing. It's the same thing, you know, when you're renting out an apartment space, because someone's going to always need, you know, somewhere to live. Now, let's take it a step back, because some people say, well, Calvin, you know, right now, financially, there's no way I can stay in a home. Well, if you actually do the math, there are some people that are, and this is what I learned that, you know, at the dealership I was working at. A lot of customers, I'm telling you, Menti, they were paying $700 a month, $800 a month, $650 a month or whatever, just for a mortgage, you know. So I'm like, man, my rent is, you know, 900 or something, you know. So I can, you know, I'm like, man, how can I get in this same position? And they have what they call an FHA loan, and it's a Federal Housing Authority loan. And either way, with that loan, you only got to put down 3.5%. The reason why I bring up this loan is because a lot of people think that you have to have a phenomenal credit score. No, you got to be a 620. You know, so, and then of course they say, well, you know, they think you got to make a phenomenal amount of income. No, you can make $30,000 a year, you know, and as long as your debt to income, you know, of course, that's a whole other conversation. But either way, it's really easy to get this home. But either way, FHA will let you get a one unit, which is, of course, you can stay in yourself, which is a normal house, a two unit, a three unit. They go all the way up to four units. So now let's break that down. Let's say if you get into a four unit building, let's say it costs you $350,000. Okay. Of course, you're not paying it all up front. But let's say your mortgage is, let's say your mortgage is $3,000. Okay. If you have three tenants that live in each unit, and of course you have your own, you know, now, you know, that's, you know, you have the people that's paying the mortgage itself. But then a person would say, well, why in the world would you want to stay with other people? Watch this. Now, there's a couple things you can do. You can still pay $1,000 toward that mortgage. So now your mortgage is $3,000 a month. You can now put $1,000 toward that on yourself because you're not paying a living expense, and the biggest expense is a living expense. So now you're paying $4,000 on a $3,000 mortgage. Now your mortgage will probably get paid in probably 22, 23 years. I'm not sure the math on that, but it'll be less than 30 years. Now let's just say it takes you the full 30 years. Let's say you do that when you're 30. By the time you're 60, and this is normally when people start talking about retirement, now that building is now paid off. But guess what? Just like the barber said, people's hair is still growing. People still need somewhere to stay, right? So now you're bringing in $3,000 a month. What's that? That's $36,000 a year. I mean, so now you have money coming in. Now you're building your home. Your is an asset because now it's bringing you money. That's passive income. And cash flow, passive income, is money coming in without you working, you know. And a lot of people say, well, how do I build something like that? And it's conversations like this. You know, you don't have to be a whiz to do this stuff. I mean, the banks are looking to give you a loan. You know, you can get a two flat as cheap as $120,000 with a mortgage of about $600-$700 a month. With insurance and everything, you could be around $900 to $1,000 a month, you know, by yourself. And if you get someone on in one of the units, let's say it's a two flat, you charge them $1,000. Now you're breaking even. In 30 years, now you have $1,000 coming in. You know, so, and you don't have to be, it doesn't have to be 30 years, especially if you were used to paying rent before. So let's say you're charging your tenant $1,000 and you pay $900. Now you're paying $1,900 on a mortgage that's $1,000. So now you end up paying it off a lot faster. And let's say you refinance. I mean, there's so many ways of doing it. So that's what I would consider good debt. Bad debt is like stupid stuff. Not stuff like, I mean, you know, stuff that you don't necessarily need, but stuff that you may want. It's stuff that's pretty much debt that's not making you money. You may go to the furniture store. You need furniture, you know, but because you don't have the cash on hand, you know, you get, you know, the card or whatever, and you put the furniture. That's bad debt. That's not going to mean you're a bad person. It's just, you know, it's just not making you money, you know. So that's okay, you know. So, like, you know, I mean, it's just all different types of things that we pay payments on as bad debt. Now, a car, again, a lot of people think that that's an asset. Once again, on paper, it is an asset, but it's not making you money. It's depreciating because you're driving it. Don't feel bad. You're supposed to drive the car. So it's just that I think that sometimes people get the information misunderstood, and they say, well, no, my house is an asset. Well, no, my car is an asset. No, it's not. I mean, you know, so, I mean, you can't fight the numbers, you know. So it is what it is, but it's not making you any money. And let me tell you something, especially for everyone that's on the line. I'm assuming everyone that's on the line is probably under 50, under 40 years old, probably. If that's the case, you do know Social Security won't be around for us. So knowing that it's either, I'll give an example. One of my clients' grandmother is only bringing in $600 a month from Social Security. Even if we got that same thing, you can't live on that. So now you have to put something in place where you need that cash flow coming in. And, you know, now you can go to the stock market. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's just like going to the boat or going to the casino, you know. So versus, you know, you can't control the value of a stock. You know, so if a stock is $10 and let's say you buy one stock, so you pay $10. And, you know, how do you make it go up to $20? There's nothing you can do. But if you buy a home, you know, how do you increase the value of that home? Easy. You take the carpet out, you put hardwood floors. You take the, you know, the laminate countertops out, you put, you know, granite countertops. You know, you take the old paint out the front, you put new paint on the front. You drag the, you know, take the old line out, put new grass down. You know, so that's how you can do it, you know. And not to sell you guys on real estate, but, I mean, it's the only vehicle that I've seen that's been around for eons, you know, that's going to work. And I'm starting to dabble into it myself. And once again, I'm not the most educated guy in the room, you know, but once again, you don't have to be. You know, Henry Ford taught us that. You know, you don't have to be the smartest guy in the room. Just find someone that is. You know, you don't have to hire them. You know, just be around them. That's it. And you can learn from that. So, but I would say, yeah, that's probably, you know, this kind of goes into tying into, you know, making a budget, things of that sort. But that's the difference between, you know, debts and having assets. And a lot of people don't know their gross income versus their net income. You know, you'd be surprised. Gross income is before taxes. Net is after, you know, all the taxes. But then your net income is actually lower than that because that doesn't equate to your expenses that you're bringing in. You know, so, but these are just, you know, things that you learn along the way. But, yeah.
Calvin, real quick, before we end the show, let's talk about renting versus owning. Are there some situations where you should not own? And in what situations should you own or should you rent? Because I get into discussions and say, oh, well, it's better for me to rent, or renting is better. You don't have to deal with all the, you know, the hassle of having to fix this or that. It's on the landlord. Mm-hmm. And always been, oh, I think you need to own. But how do you see that?
You know what? It's a very good thing. I'll give you guys, my mom is, you know, in her, what is that, like 50s or almost, yeah, she's in her 50s. And she lives in Florida, and she's not a fan. She keeps moving from different places to place, and finances is most definitely not a problem. But the thing about it is that she feels just like what you said. It makes sense to stay in, like, in a condo or something, you know, that way the association takes care of all of that. You know, because when you stay in a home, you know, the house is going to need maintenance. Just like when you have a car, the car's going to need maintenance. You know, but the thing about it is that I think more so it's a male kind of thing. The reason why I say it's a male kind of thing, because we feel the need to kind of correct the situation. We feel need to fix it. Like if there's something wrong with the plumbing, you know, I'm not a plumber. You know, so, and I don't play one on TV either. You know, so either way, so I would call someone that specializes in that area. You know, if something, you know, electrical happens in my house. And no, and I'm telling you. So I own a building, and I've had plumbing issues. I've had alarm issues. I've had just small stuff. You know, I mean, to me it's small because I feel like if money can fix it, then it's really not that big of a deal. Not saying that money is, you know, is going to fix everything, but a lot of times, you know, if you can afford to do it, then that's fine. But this goes back to what you're talking about. You, first of all, you got to be realistic. You know that this and this is very similar to, does a person keep a car or does a person finance a car? You know, so if you keep a car, you do know eventually it's going to need maintenance. You're going to go from normal oil changes to high mile oil changes. You're going to need start needing tires, brake jobs, you know, tune ups, you know, all types of stuff. So it can actually start costing you just as much as, you know, having a car that's brand new that doesn't need anything. You know, so having a home, you know, of course you're that person. But let's just talk raw numbers, okay? Let's say, for example, and this happened to a friend of mine, and I think his dad or someone, his granddad or someone, he rented this apartment complex for about 40 years, okay? No, not 40, I'm sorry, about 30 years. But he's been renting the apartment complex about 30 years, and his rent in the place is about $1,200, okay? Now, if that had been a home, guess what? He would own it by now, because 30-plus years have now gone by. And so now you're saving that amount of money and you still have somewhere to stay. Now, granted, did you fix some stuff along the way? Absolutely. You know, but at the same time, when you really think about it, if you stay in a decent place, not some place that's halfway decent and not some place that's luxurious, but if you think about it, how many times have you honestly called your landlord? Hey, you know, the water's not that hot. All he did was go downstairs and turn the knob. Hey, the toilet's backed up. Okay, all he did was call a plumber. It's not like he came and did it himself. Some landlords do that. So they can save the money, you know, but to me, time is my biggest thing. So I don't have time for it. You know, I would just call someone. I don't want to make it worse and I'm paying more, you know, like you don't pull your own tooth out. You go to a dentist, you know, so just same thing. You go to someone that specializes. Will it cost you money? Absolutely. That's what you save for. That goes to that budget, you know, to where, you know, part of your savings should be, you know, let's say $20 a month, $50 a month, you know, where you can put that, let's say $30 a month. If you save $30 a month for 10 months, now that's $300, you know, a year if something happens to the house, you know. So also they have homeowners insurance plans, you know, so where you pay pennies on a dollar, $30 a month, and if something happens, you know, they call out a specialist. Sears has something. It's it's less than $40 a month, and, you know, you pay that, and then if something happens to any of your appliances, you know, guess what? They send out a specialist, and you don't have to pay a deductible or copay or nothing like that. So it's pretty awesome. But the reason why I brought that story up of the guy that stayed in the place, paid $1,200 for over 30-plus years, you know, if had that been a home, he would have owned it by now, you know. So that's really all it is. A lot of times it's just mental. You know, you're thinking you have to do some stuff. But I've owned my own home. You know, for those who don't know the rest of my story, at 21, I had my car repossessed, okay, on my 21st birthday, actually. So I looked outside, my car was gone, okay. So now, but then by my 25th birthday, I got approved for my first home. So I've been a homeowner since that time, and I've probably had, outside of a few plumbing issues, I mean, very small stuff. We're talking less than, you know, probably less than $1,000 that I've spent just, you know, getting stuff fixed in a matter of 3 years. So what's that? That's a little bit over $300 a year, maybe $330. What's that, $335, $333 a year? So it's at $333 a year that I've used, you know, actually maintaining the house. From plumbing issues, whatever. But I mean, it is what it is. But now that's taken care of, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, so it's really all, you know. But then another thing too is, can you afford to do it? You know, sometimes, you know, when you're paying that rent a lot of times, depending on where you stay, comes out a lot cheaper than a home, because with a home, you got your mortgage, you got your taxes. So you want to make sure that it equates to what you're used to paying in rent. So if you're used to paying you know, rent $1,000, you know, make sure that your mortgage, your insurance, your FHA fee, if you decide to go FHA versus conventional, you can talk to a mortgage broker about that. You know, but you can have those fees stay the same. Now you're paying your own utilities. I know a big thing, I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. So a big thing in Chicago, people pay, a lot of buildings and landlords pay for heat, you know, so, you're paying for people's heat. I mean, you know, you got to pay your own gas bill now, you know, so it, but you know, once again, and as adults, we're just older children. So it just takes time for us to, you know, get used to these things. Because remember, we set the tone, you know. So our children, they see that type of stuff. So when children, when they grow up in bad neighborhoods, when they grow up in, like, the projects, when they grow up in a home, they remember things like that. And they say, okay, all right, well, I grew up in a home. And I'm not, like, you know, nothing bad if you have an apartment versus a home. But the thing about it is that you set the bar. I had a client. He says, no, his mom, she's been renting for years. I think she's like in her 60s. and he's in his 20s, she's almost 50, 60 or something like that. And either way, he's like, no, the home is just too much work, you know, this. But then the thing about it is that, you know, we haven't even begun to talk about the tax deductions, you know. So just so you know, all of that stuff I did, you know, I get a tax break on, you know, so because I am a homeowner, you know. So when I bought my, you know, when I buy salt for the building, when I buy, you know, my lawnmower, my power washer, you know, my trimmer, you know, I mean, anything that has to do with maintaining this building, you know, you get tax incentives on. A lot of people think, say, oh, no, that's nothing. Oh, no, it's most definitely something, you know. So it's most definitely worth your time, you know. But these are things that, you know, I won't say a grown-up conversation, but these are when we start the conversation shifts, you know, when you're talking about home ownership and things of that sort. But honestly, otherwise you're going to end up consistently paying rent. But once again, some people are okay with that. They don't want to. It's like having that car. You're gonna pay to have a car, whether it's for maintenance or whether it's a monthly car payment. But you're going to pay to live somewhere, whether it's a mortgage or whether it's maintenance after the house is done, or whether it's no paying rent, you know, for a landlord, you know, from a landlord. So, you know, another thing too is that most, unless you're renting a home, now that's a little bit different. If you're renting an apartment, now you're dealing with neighbors, you know. I made a joke not too long ago, you know, people smoking in the building, people fighting in the hallway, you know, it could be a nice building, but it could be horrible cooking, you know, it could be loud music, you know, so it could be, you know, their cats and their dogs, you know, it could be, you know, it could be all different types of things. It could be nowhere to park, you know, it could be all different types of things, you know. So, but it's nothing like having your own, because you can do what you want, you can do how you want to do it. You're not making excuses when you have guests. Oh, well, don't worry about that, or park down. No, it's just different, you know. But once again, it all depends on what your goals are. And really, a lot of people have a goal to own a home. They just think it's almost impossible. But with my clients averaging 25 to 30 points a month, we turn that dream into a reality.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, tell them how they can get a hold of you.
Absolutely. You guys can take down my number. My number is 708-629-1717. Again, that's 708-629-1717. That is my business line. You guys can also, see me on Facebook, Go Simply Pro Credit Consultation. That's GoSimplyPro. Go Simply Pro. Why Go Simply Pro? I mean, hey, the domain name was available. So it used to be Simply Professional. I feel like that was too long. But Go Simply Pro is easy to remember. But yeah, GoSimplyPro.com. You can see it on Facebook, everything. There's a blog. Get a lot of information. Oh, make sure you download my free ebook. It's everything you need to know about your credit score. It's completely free, no gimmicks, no nothing. And as soon as you go to the site, it's there waiting on you. And but yeah, that's how you guys can reach me. I'm amazingly affordable, you know, and we're helping people not just improve their scores, but better their lifestyle, lower their car payments, you know, get a newer car, you know, get them from living with their parents to getting their own apartment, getting them from an apartment to having a home, getting them from a home to a second home while still paying the mortgage on the first home, you know, owning a building, starting a business. You know, there's so much that kind of ties behind credit, and a lot of people, they're not educated on it, and that's where I come in as your credit coach. So, yeah, I'm here to help. I'm here to serve.
All right, well, I appreciate you. I can tell you this. He's helped me out. He's helped hundreds of others out, and I will have you back on the show very soon, and next time we'll take callers. Is that okay with you?
Man, that sounds great. That's what I'm here to do. Let's do it.
All right, Calvin. Appreciate it. I want to thank everybody for listening. This is Make Sense with Menelik. Until the next time.